thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to talk about some of my work. So I'm going to talk about the preservation of variant regions under discretization for reaction diffusion equations. An invariant region is a region in solution space inside of which a solution remains if it starts there. I'll write down the definition again in a minute. You could sort of think of this as a kind of generalization of preserving, say, the dissipativity property of the heat equation when you discretize it. All right, but as I'll show you, it's a little more interesting than that. Now, you could think of various reasons why you might wish to do that. But the reason that I'm particularly interested in here is in the detection of blow-up in solutions numerically in a reliable way. So I'm just going to sort of give a motivational talk, motivate why I want to do this a little bit, give an overview of how the analysis goes. At the end, I'll give references if you want to see details. So I'd like to really begin by giving some motivation by thinking about blow-up for a minute. By blow-up, I mean that a solution or some of its derivatives become infinite, either at finite time or at infinite time. Okay, a classic example is u prime is u squared. It's initial condition 1. The solution is 1 over 1 minus t. The solution's perfectly fine at 0 up to time 1, and then it becomes infinite. Now, blow-up problems are particularly interesting in reaction-diffusion equations because they're based so often on phenomenological modeling. So part of model verification is deciding whether the model admits blow-up. Sometimes you want it to admit blow-up, sometimes you don't want it to. Now, the problem is, of course, is that the analysis is difficult because a lot of things may not be present. We may not have existence uniqueness. We may not have smoothness. So numerics are used very heavily to investigate blow-up. But, of course, the same difficulties that cause trouble for analysis cause trouble for numerics. In particular, we don't have classic convergence results. We just don't have the smoothness. Okay? So this naturally leads to the question, can we trust numerical solutions? And I'd like to break that down into two points. Can discretization prevent blow-up, and can discretization cause artificial blow-up? And I'd like to answer those with just a couple examples. So the first example is a little one-dimensional model of shear flow in a fluid in which the viscosity decreases as the temperature increases. So you have parallel plates. One plate's moving above the other plate, which is fixed. And you assume the flow is uniform in all the directions that are perpendicular to the direction x I've marked there, so that the fluid only varies in the x direction and in time. And you can normalize things so the upper plate has velocity 1 and the separation distance is 1. Now, if you write down the various conservation principles in terms of the temperature, the shear stress, and the velocity, and you assume a relationship between the shear stress, velocity, and temperature of the following form. So there's a parameter alpha, which is positive, and the shear stress decreases as a power of the temperature, and this power is alpha, then you get a singular system of reaction-diffusion equations. So I'm not saying all where the model comes from. It's a singular system because there's a parabolic problem with sort of a bad diffusion. Then there's an ordinary differential equation. There's no smoothing in the ordinary differential equation. And I'm particularly interested in such singular systems. So this problem has actually been well studied over the last 30 years in engineering and mathematics. And the basic issue is whether it's sufficiently complicated to allow blow-up to happen. Now, what does it mean to be blow-up? If you do experiments with fluids in which the viscosity decreases sufficiently quickly with temperature, then you get shear layers. And these are very narrow regions in which the velocity of the fluid changes very abruptly. So if it's really discontinuous, so that means that the x derivative velocity is infinite. So it's a blow-up issue. So let's see. Does blow-up occur? That's the basic question. And there are some things that are known. One thing, there's uniform shear flow is a solution. So this is the solution. This is the solution in which the velocity of the fluid at the lower plate is 0, and the velocity at the upper plate is the velocity of the upper plate, and just increases linearly in between. Most of the literature is analyzing whether or not this solution is stable or not. That is, if I perturb it slightly, what happens? Now, you can prove that if this parameter alpha is not too large, viscosity decreases but not too quickly, then it is stable, and the solutions are smooth for all time. However, you can also prove that if alpha is bigger than 1, it's unstable. And the controversy is exactly what happens when alpha is bigger than 1. All right? So I'm going to show you a computation, and I'm going to show a computation that starts with a solution that's near the uniform shear flow. This is the uniform shear flow, and there is a kind of little perturbation there. You can see it more clearly in the temperature. There's a little bump. Now, if you let this thing run, this is an adiabatic process. So the temperature should always increase. The question is whether it localizes. Okay, and if it localizes, it can form a shear layer. And according to my computation, it seems to do that. It takes a long time. You'll see the time scale down there. But there's lots of evidence. There's lots of evidence that this doesn't happen. There's also evidence that blow up occurs at finite time. Well, I won't discuss this problem in very much detail, but I will just say that that if you do some experiments, you observe that observations of blow up depend critically on the accuracy of numerical solutions. So let me just show you that with this plot. What I'm plotting here is the peak height of the x derivative of the velocity. So if there's blow up, it should go to infinity. This is versus time. And the blue computations were measurements made on discretizations which were uniform in space. And the numbers here are the number of nodes in space on the unit interval. So 32, 64, 128, up to 16,000. In every case, what happens is a layer starts to form, gets a certain steepness, and then it stays. It doesn't become any steeper. And the steepness depends on the mesh size. Now, if you do an adaptive computation, that is, you keep adding nodes to the computation as the thing becomes steeper, that never happens. It just becomes steeper and steeper and steeper without stopping. You can understand this by looking at the artificial diffusion added by the discretization, but I won't explain it. But it's enough to understand that you should not see the height, the steepness of this depend on the mesh size. Okay? So, returning to my questions, can discretization prevent blow-up? The answer is yes, and accuracy can inhibit blow-up. And our solution to this is to use adaptive error control, adaptive mesh refinement, to maintain accuracy before blow-up. But this makes the second question all the more critical, because if you use adaptive error control, you end up with a very complicated system. It's very hard to know what's going on with it. And in particular, it is possible, depending on how you do discretization, to add energy to the system. So to illustrate that that can be dangerous, I'll talk about a problem in which I know there cannot be blow-up. And that, now I'll define an invariant region. So an invariant region is a set in solution space inside of which a solution remains for all time. Now, if you have a compact invariant region for a reaction diffusion system, that often can imply global existence of smoothness of solutions. Without sort of saying why, let's just consider this example again. U prime is equal to U squared. So U squared is not globally Lipschitz continuous. If U increases, the Lipschitz constant of U squared increases, and that's what drives the blow up. If you know, however, that the solution somehow remained in a compact invariant region, then a local Lipschitz assumption will work as well as the global Lipschitz assumption for giving existence and uniqueness and smoothness. Okay? So I'm going to look at a problem in which I know there are invariant regions, and I'll explain why in a minute. But so this is a problem you can find in Smoller's book of reaction diffusion equations. And you can prove that the solution here, if it starts off to be positive, must remain positive. And I'm going to show you a computation made with PDEs, which is a sophisticated commercial adaptive PDE solver that runs under Maxima for this problem. I'm just going to show you the R component. And I start off with data that's positive, and you watch the evolution. and it seems to go okay, but at some time it seems to get hung up and it starts doing a lot of refinement, and then you see blow up, apparently. And in particular, the blow up's in the negative direction, which really can't happen. Now, you might think, okay, well, you could just change the tolerances, but if you change the tolerances on three orders of magnitude, you'll get the same blow up time within the three digits. So if you didn't know anything about the system, you might very well think this blow up is there, and you might start trying to take measurements and or the shape of the blow up or so on. That's right. So there's an instability, right. That's right. Because, in other words, this discretization they use does not preserve any kind of invariant region. That's right. That's right. If you say, if I started at the time where it was became slightly negative and said that local solution, is it doing the right behavior? Then it could be. There might be. Well, you can preserve it, but that's what the talk's about. It's just to motivate that you should preserve it. Yeah, okay, yeah, that's right. So it's only to motivate that you should preserve it, not to criticize what they're doing. Just they didn't write this discretization to preserve these regions. So okay, so can discretization cause artificial blow-up? Well, the answer is yes, it can. And this is the motivation for using schemes that preserve invariant regions. Okay, so that's all the example is supposed to do. But it is an interesting thing that if you have a scheme which does preserve invariant regions that might exist for the problem, and you observe blow up for all levels of discretization, that's strong evidence that the blow up's occurring. Okay. All right. So now I'm going to talk about the preservation of invariant regions, and I'll do it for a simplified problem just to make it like simple. So it's a system of reaction diffusion equations. Each unknown satisfies a reaction diffusion equation. The coupling can be just in the reaction terms, and some of the equations can be singular. So some of the diffusions can be zero, but there has to be at least one parabolic problem. Now, for that kind of system, you don't talk about invariant regions. Rather, you can specialize to invariant rectangles. So this is a rectangle in solution space whose sides are parallel to the coordinate axis. And for that problem, there's a very nice condition which guarantees that a rectangle is invariant, which is just that the reaction has to point in on the boundary. Okay, so if you have two unknowns, U1 and U2, then you really just have a rectangle, and the reaction term just points in, okay, like that. That will guarantee it's invariant. Basically, two facts give invariance. One is that there's a maximum principle for the diffusion part, and the other is that the sign of F on the boundary means it pushes solutions near the boundary back inside. And I'll describe that part in more detail in a second. Okay. All right, so I just wanted to show you what that looks like. So this is again a problem that you can get out of Smoller. This is the invariant reasons for it. I'm plotting here U1 versus U2. It's a curve. I'm just letting it run. And the invariant reasons are very nice because, well, this is just converging to a steady state. But you can have interesting dynamics inside while avoiding the possibility blow up. Okay? So another way to avoid blow up is to assume global Lipschitz assumptions on the reaction term and diffusion dominance. But this doesn't allow very interesting dynamics in general. Okay. And many problems have invariant rectangles. There's a list of some that people study. Okay, including the model of Rabies that I wrote down before. I don't know. Probably the parameters in the problem would be different. So I'm going to just describe two things. I'm going to describe the first thing that Arya mentioned is the preservation of exact invariant rectangles. Can you construct numerical methods that will preserve an invariant rectangle exactly? Well, this is related to whether the numerical method satisfies a maximum principle when applied to the heat equation. And for standard finite element method, this requires the use of lumped mass quadrature to evaluate the mass integrals. So you just have to do something to the standard Galerkin discretization. Stop. There should be one more. Okay. So you can prove a theorem which says that you can construct such a method. Unfortunately, it requires a very severe time step constraint. Now, putting this back in context, we're using adaptive error control to try and maintain accuracy because we suspect there might be some kind of blow-up. So if you use adaptive error control, it's expensive. So to make that worthwhile, you want to avoid things like stability constraints on time steps. Okay? So this really makes the result impractical. You can't really afford to compute under those conditions. So it would be nice to somehow get around that, and I'll describe how that could be done. Now, the idea is to go back to the fact that we're using adaptive error control. So if you think about it, you might think, well, you have the true solution here. If it's got some kind of invariant rectangle in which it stays for all time, and you can really control the error of the approximation, surely there has to be some sort of approximate invariant rectangle for the solution. Of course, the difficulty is that error bounds grow exponentially with time, if you just prove for such a system. So the real picture might look like this. Okay? The solution could wander away quite far. I don't know. Maybe you could do this for a short time, but certainly not for a long time. Okay? So you need to do something a little different. So that's what I'll describe to you. Now, I have to change things a little bit. So I have to assume that there are concentric rectangles, an inner rectangle and an outer rectangle, such that all the rectangles in between these two are invariant for the problem. That's what we call a fuzzy invariant rectangle. So you can think of it like this. Not just one rectangle, but a family of rectangles, F pointing in on all of them. Now, what you can prove is that a solution that starts with data in the outer rectangle here, somewhere, must enter the inner rectangle after a fixed finite time, which is independent of the solution. It's just a characteristic time of this problem that depends on how F points in and the sizes and shapes of these rectangles. So let me just explain why that's true for an ordinary differential equation. So for an ordinary differential equation, then the rectangles are just intervals. You have the inner and you have the outer rectangle, like that. And F is pointing in this yellow region. Now suppose U starts over here, all right? We know F is pointing in. Suppose it's pointing in by at least a constant minus M, which is negative. Well, you just integrate the inequality. Right? And you'll see that you get the distance between U and this point must decrease. And you can get a time in which the U must enter into the inner rectangle, this characteristic time T star. Okay? Now, for reaction diffusion equations, it's more complicated because solutions could be increasing and decreasing simultaneously. So you do the calculus on the Lipschitz continuous functional, which is defined by scaling the inner rectangle until it just encompasses the solution. I use that scale as a measure of the size of the solution. Okay. Well, so I won't give you details, but that's how it's done. Now, the other ingredient here is how you control the accuracy. So now we have this fact that we have this fuzzy region. The solutions that are in this outer part somehow must go into the inner part. We also have to control the accuracy. And for that, we use something known as a posteriori error analysis. I'll just tell you what the ingredients are that make this argument work. Now, the a posteriori error estimates estimate the error not in terms of the solution, the unknown solution, but in terms of the approximation. So you avoid having to make assumptions about the smoothness of the solution. Rather, you look, analyze the smoothness of the approximation. The estimates have the following form. The error at time t in some norm is bounded by an exponential factor that grows, that I mentioned before, and the maximum residual over the time that you're looking at. The residual, without defining what it is found, roughly speaking, by substituting the approximation into the reaction-diffusion equation. And what you can prove is that the residual can always be made small by refining the discretization. Okay, so we have something defined in terms of the approximation that you can always make small. We have this exponential factor that cannot be used for a very long time. So I'll just now describe what the result would look like. So there's really two steps to the analysis. Let's assume that we have here's a picture of my outer rectangle and the inner rectangle. Let's assume that my approximation, which I'm representing just as a point, is inside the inner rectangle. Now, what we're going to do is compare u to a nearby local solution, right, which starts near u but not quite at u. There's a technical point about smoothing the data so that you avoid non-smooth data estimates. But we start with some nearby data point, which is smooth, and we look at the solution that comes from that point. Now, this is an invariant rectangle for any solutions, so over one time step, this solution cannot leave the rectangle. It might go up to the boundary, but it can't leave. Now, because of the error, the a posteriori error analysis, we can control the error over one step, so that u cannot be too far away from the true solution. And in particular, we can make sure that it does not get too close to the boundary of the outer rectangle by adjusting the tolerance and the adaptive error control. Okay? Now, because we're doing discrete time stepping, it is very possible to be inside the inner rectangle and to step outside the inner rectangle. All right? Because it's sort of taking these discrete steps, unlike the true solution, which is moving continuously. So that's unavoidable, that you might step out of the inner rectangle. Now, the second part of the argument is that you are in this yellow region outside the inner rectangle, but inside the boundary of the outer rectangle. And again, we look at a nearby solution. Okay? Now, what do we know? Well, we know there's a fixed time, which has nothing to do with the data where we're at, by which this solution must go inside the inner rectangle. Now what we do is we simply control the error of our approximation over that fixed time. And it will not, by the end of this end point, it cannot be too far away. It can't be any further than it is to begin with. Okay? Now we just repeat the argument. So the theorem looks like this. If the residual in your adaptive error control is kept smaller than the tolerance, it depends on, well, various conditions in this fuzzy region, how wide it is and how much strongly F points in. But it's independent of time. Then you will remain inside the fuzzy region, the outer region, for all time. Okay. So I'll stop there. But I'll put up two references. If you want to read about the invariant regions and also the adaptive error control, you can look in our paper in the memoirs. If you'd like to look at this model of the shear flow with temperature-dependent viscosity, I forgot the details, but it just appeared in Journal of Computational Physics. I'll stop there. Thanks.